This is the SF Productions Podcast Network. How I Got My Wife to Read Comics, Episode 221. This episode was pre-recorded. Can a comic collector of over 25 years get his wife to read them? Will she let him keep them? Learn more in this podcast. Let's go to the comic book lounge with Mindy and Mark.
It's back to school for DCU Magic 102, Wizards and Their Gadgets. This is How I Got My Wife to Read Comics for Sunday, August 26, 2012. I'm Mark.
And I'm Mindy. Just a reminder, you can go to sfpodcastnetwork.com to get the feed, other SF podcasts and blogs. And you can subscribe via iTunes where you can leave us a review.
And you can email us at sfpodcastnetwork@gmail.com, like us at facebook.com/sfppn. Follow us on Twitter at SFPPN, or call us at 614-321-9737. That's 614-321-9SFP. We're pre-recording this episode.
Because, of course, right now we're actually sipping margaritas in Cancun.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, yeah
exactly. Not really.
Yeah.
Sorry.
So, in a previous episode, we covered the Homo Magi, that is, magic users in the DCU that...
were inherently magical.
Exactly. So now we're going to move on to magicians that have their magic based on some sort of artifact or gadget.
What would be the difference between magic via artifact and just having a super scientific artifact?
Well, the idea being that scientific gadgets are something somebody built mechanically that have no innate supernatural basis.
Okay. And the other ones are imbued by a god or some
other magician or something like that. Now, we are going to skip the supervillains for now. We may get back to them later, but there's lots of supervillains with magical gadgets. But the big one is Dr. Fate. We've actually already done in a full episode, just a 101 episode on Dr. Fate. It's episode 180.
Because Dr. Fate is very confusing.
Yes. But in a very short version of that, his first appearance was in More Fun Comics, number 55. He's an archaeologist's son. They find the Helmet of Fate. It gives him multiple magical abilities. When he wears the helmet, it also takes over his mind. Multiple people have been Dr. Fate over time. He was a founding member of the JSA, the original JSA. He was also in Justice League International. Again, go listen to that episode if you want to hear more about Dr. Fate.
So, is it implied that the helmet finds the person that should be wearing it?
That's what they're indicating now.
Okay.
So, then we have Enchantress. And her first appearance was in Strange Adventures number 187 in 1966. Some unknown entity gives her superpowers, gives her these magic powers. And she kind of goes back and forth between being a heroine and a villainess. And she's actually, at one point, in Shadow Pact, a really great title from the mid-2000s that DC put out. She was also in Suicide Squad for quite a long time.
So she was given powers, but not really an artifact, or...?
That's the impression I'm getting.
Okay.
We have Dr. Mist. His first appearance was in Super Friends, number 12, 1978. Can't believe that the Super Friends title actually generated that.
The Super Friends generated a number of things that moved into regular continuity.
Yeah. So he's exposed to the Pillar of Life and becomes immortal. And he helps to form the Global Guardians and also a short-lived title called Primal Force, which I think was in the 90s. We have.
So, is his only power he's immortal?
No, well,
he's... Or does he be able to become Mist, since he's Dr. Mist?
I don't think he can become Mist. I think he just, because he's immortal, he's had all this time to amass magical powers.
Oh, okay.
That's the impression I'm getting. We have Sargon the Sorcerer. His first appearance was in All-American Comics number 26, 1941. He's found the Ruby of Life and that's the source of his powers, and he could control anything that he can actually touch.
So control how? Like move it, change it.
If it touches a person, he can control them.
Do you think sometimes that the older artifacts were less well explained when they were created?
Absolutely.
And so
it had whatever abilities they needed for that issue.
People weren't as picky back then.
Yeah, Golden Age, you could get away with a lot back then. It's like, oh, yeah, he has that power now. Right. We never mentioned it before. He's never used it before. He'll never use it again. But I needed that to get out of the storyline.
Okay.
We have Kong Gorilla. And his first appearance was in More Fun Comics number 56, 1940.
Okay, now I have another question.
Yes.
Is it More Fun Comics because there was a Fun Comics?
Yes, because there was actually New Fun, and New Fun was the first DC comic. And
okay.
After that, they instead of saying New Fun, they called it More Fun.
Okay, so it's not like more fun than other comics. It's more fun because you didn't get enough in that fun.
Right.
Okay.
Yes. Starts with this guy named Congo Bill, who had standard jungle adventures. In fact, at one point, he actually had his own movie serial. So
we'll have to look for that. That might be interesting.
Yeah, but it's has nothing to do with Kong Gorilla. It's just standard jungle adventures.
Uh-huh.
But in the 1950s, he's given this magic ring by a dying tribal chief, which allows him to transfer his consciousness into a golden gorilla, this rare golden gorilla. And then he's later trapped inside a cave. He uses the ring to transfer his consciousness into the gorilla, and then the gorilla goes over and saves him, moves the boulders out of the way so that Congo Bill can get back out.
But wasn't he recently in a book where his body was killed while he was in the gorilla and he's permanently a gorilla now?
Yeah, in the Robinson run of JLA.
Okay.
He was, because Congo Bill at that point was actually very old. I don't know if he actually was killed or he just died of old age.
Okay.
And so he's now, as you said, permanently trapped inside this body of a gorilla. And of course, when this swap occurs, the gorilla's consciousness goes into Congo Bill. So he's just sitting there, you know, picking nits and
yes,
doing whatever. Ibis the Invincible, his first appearance was in Wiz Comics number 2, 1940. That's a Fawcett title. Again, remember that DC bought out the Fawcett titles, the biggest one being Captain Marvel. But there were a number of other characters, including Ibis the Invincible. So he's this ancient Egyptian prince, and his beloved Taya is poisoned by a bad guy, Set, and then uses this Ibis stick to save her. But it's going to take a while to save her from the poison, like 4,000 years. So he also uses this spell on himself so he can wake up when she wakes up. So they both end up as mummies waking up in 1940. And the Ibis stick gives him, again, various magical powers based on whatever he needed that issue. We have Nightmaster. His first appearance was in Showcase number 82, 1969. What's interesting is, after that arc, and again, remember, Showcase was a way to bring these new characters into the DCU, or changing existing characters. And so the idea was, you got two or three issues to establish the character. If there was enough public response, you'd see him again. Well, apparently there wasn't a lot of public response, because he wasn't seen again until 1990. And he was apparently then used in some Vertigo stuff. This rock singer, remember, 1969,
woohoo,
is transported to a mystical world, and he's given a Sword of Night, which forces people to tell the truth and warns him of danger. His probably most memorable run is as a member of Shadow Pact.
I don't remember him.
Remember the guy with the sword and wore blue? And maybe not that memorable.
Maybe that's why he was gone from 69 till 90.
That could be. Prince Rahman, I don't want to call it ramen, like the noodles.
I was going to say Rayman.
Rayman.
I don't know.
His first appearance was in House of Secrets number 23, 1959. He was originally this guy named Mark Merlin, an ordinary guy who inherits a magician's home with lots of artifacts.
Oh, come on. With a last name like Merlin.
Yeah. Again, now we're in the Silver Age, and there's a lot of wacky things like that going on. But later, and this is House of Secrets number 73, 1965, he's banished to a magical dimension where he gets this hexagon-shaped amulet, which gives him mind-over-matter powers. But he can't get back in his current body to the real world, so he's reincarnated back on Earth as Prince Rayman.
Okay.
So,
do you think they're relying less and less on magical items in the last 20 years?
Yeah.
And more on technology and like a science fiction-y thing rather than a magic thing?
Well, certainly, because the Silver Age really especially was trying to get away from the magical stuff and was, okay, we got to be modern, so it's all going to be scientific and all has to make sense and be explainable. And especially just recently, in the last, say, 10 years, you've seen more where especially villains are no longer, well, I have this gun or I have this weather wizard with a wand. It's now inherent within them. Something happened to them, which now gives them the innate ability to do these things. That seems to be a big trend because, let's face it, it is kind of a simple thing for a superhero to beat a guy who has a gadget. Because it's like,
you can just take the gadget away.
Yeah, knock the gadget out of his hands and you win. So...
That's true.
So I think you're right, that's what you see a lot. One character that I had not thought of, which certainly is based on an artifact and is magical based, is Alan Scott, both in terms of the original origin and now the new origin. Although the new origin also has a little bit of quasi-religious concepts in it, godly type things in it.
Well, you could also then put Diana Wonder Woman in that category because her equipment, so to speak,
came from the gods.
Right.
And we're going to do a whole episode on magic beings
powers.
Based on gods.
Yeah, I forgot about that.
But especially the Golden Age Green Lantern, it's basically he finds an artifact.
Right.
He finds the lantern.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so you do have that as one other really good example out there. Now, I'm sure there are other examples, and I'm sure we've missed some. We are going to do some more of these magic classes, and I think the next one will be on
God-based heroes.
So, sorry, no who's on the cover this week, because this is a taping this in advance. Want to remind you to go to sfpodcastnetwork.com to get the feed, other SF podcasts, and blogs. We actually finished up Hogan's Heroes, and we're going to start talking about the Justice League animated series. That's the next thing I'm working on.
Woohoo!
Hopefully by the time this airs, I'll actually have some blog stuff down on that. So you can subscribe via iTunes, and please leave us a review.
You can email sfpodcastnetwork@gmail.com, like us at facebook.com/sfppn, call us at 614-321-9737. That's 614-321-9SFP.
Thanks for listening, everybody.
Bye.
Bye-bye.